This is an AboveTopSecret.com member podcast, and I am Magic, M-A-G-I-C. I'm a member of AboveTopSecret.com, and this is Volume 2 of Amon's Planar Model of Spiritual Reality. So anyway, okay, my rambling style leads this to be a multi-volume podcast. Shame on me, but I'm probably not likely to change anytime soon. So anyway, in my first volume on this particular series, I talked about the basic, the definition, if you will, and I'll repeat that here, and that's, I call it Amon's Planar Model of Spiritual Reality, and I define it this way. Whenever two or more spirits come into intimate contact, they form a plane. All planes are formed in this fashion. All reality is composed of these planes. And in the previous volume, I talked about what some of the ramifications of this model are and how that explains the nature of things as such as gods, worship and prayer and sacrifice. And I wanted to get more into that, the nature of gods and these group entities that I call gods and planes and how that all works. And what this does for me, at least, is it gives me a rationale. It helps me to understand why so much spirituality seems to involve conflict and recruitment. The whole, why do heavenly beings want to be worshipped? Why is that important to them? Why are they jealous gods? Why do they require prayer? Why do they require sacrifice? And if we look at them as spiritual collectives and see that their power derives from these things, then we realize that not only are these things important to them, but ultimately these things are necessary to their continued survival. If a god loses its following, the god just reverts back to being a spirit again, and a simple spirit. And by the way, what do I mean by that? I think that each god entity has what could be thought of as an alpha spirit, that within every collective, including this one, by the way, including our own plane, I think there is technically a god of this world, if you will, that serves as sort of the personality of the reality in which we live. But let's talk about them in a more general sense. From what I can tell, and by the way, I don't think this is always the case, but this seems to generally be the case, that in every plane, in every spiritual collective, in every godhood, there is a single spirit which serves as the god, serves as what I call it, the alpha spirit. It is the single spirit on which all the other spirits are focused, and on which all the worship and prayer and sacrifice and all that attention, it's focused into this spirit, and this spirit serves as sort of a conduit or channel for all of that spiritual energy, if you will. And while that spirit will have a lot to say and do with regards to the personality of the god, I think that in that process of becoming a god, a spirit actually becomes subject to the collective will of the followers, of the worshipers, and that that characteristics will be taken on by this god that weren't there, that didn't exist in the spirit before. And so this spirit becomes an avatar, if you will, for that god. It becomes the focal point, and where that spirit, quote unquote, is where that god is. And the whole, the plane of the god is built around this god, and the sustenance of this god takes the form of worship and prayer and sacrifice, and that's why these things are important to gods. And it doesn't matter whether they're so-called good gods or bad gods, they all operate the same way, as best I can tell. This explains, if you look at the Bible and you look at sacred texts from any tradition, this explains a great deal. Hindus and Buddhists, I mean, it's all there. It's all there. And this is my way of interpreting these patterns that I've been seeing. So all of these gods know that they must either grow or die. So they recruit and they politic and they fight amongst themselves. And this is spiritual warfare, and spiritual warfare is going on all the time, and it takes many different forms. On Earth, we tend to think of warfare as throwing spears at each other and blowing each other up and that kind of stuff. And in a sense, and in some kinds of spiritual context, that's what happens in the spirit world as well. In fact, many spiritual conflicts are just like that. They're like a physical conflict, and they take that form. But more, what underlies all that, though, is what the real goal of spiritual warfare is recruitment. You know, you're not necessarily out to destroy one another. And as far as I can tell, spirits cannot be destroyed. There's a lot of rumors and there's dogma that suggests that they can. But frankly, that's the only constant I'm really seeing across all these things that I'm studying, is that apparently we can't be destroyed. And that's good news and it's bad news in some ways. But, and there's a lot of reasons for that. And I don't think I want to necessarily go down that road too far in this podcast series. But this state of warfare represents the struggle for supremacy. And it's not even so much supremacy, but it's survival. On the part of many gods, if their followers are lured away by other gods, then these gods cease to exist. And I think there are a lot of gods that fall into that. But it's surprising just how tenacious some gods can be. The spirit is abandoned. You know, the alpha spirit of a god is abandoned. And all the spirits leave, and leaving this spirit alone, but or with a small following. And the spirit just can't handle the idea that it's not a god anymore. So it just keeps trying to be a god. that's an interesting thing in and of itself. But, here we have these images which correspond to things like in the Bhagavad Gita and, the tales from Christian mythology of battles in the heavens and battles between angels and demons. And really, these... tales seem to be cross-cultural. They seem to be reflected in all spiritual traditions, that there's a concept of spiritual warfare and good versus evil. And what's good in these contexts? Well, good is whoever's on your side, and evil is whoever's on the other side. And from the point of view of of any god, any other god is a potential enemy. And not only that, but they're competitors at the very least. And when you think in terms of another god taking your followers and destroying your godhood, that sounds pretty evil, doesn't it? Someone luring you away and literally destroying your plane, destroying your godhood. And as best I can tell, this process is constantly underway and always has been. And there's a lot of different kinds of spirits and spirits of different development, but I think we're all related, that we're all basically from the same place, and that we may think of each other as greater or lesser, but I think every spirit is necessary for this process. But I'll go down that another time. What it boils down to is spiritual warfare is a contest of wills, and whoever has the strongest will wins. So gods which are tightly regimented and dogmatic and organized, in which all the spirits in that plane are tightly focused on the objectives of godhood, those will tend to prevail. Planes and gods which are less organized and less focused will tend to... will tend to have their membership stolen away by other gods, and they will tend to fail eventually. What's interesting about all this is that it seems to me that the principle that's most commonly that I see in terms of these planes and gods, and by the way, I've really been watching and seeing a lot of this stuff, and I'm just crazy, I don't know, but I've really been in touch with a lot of spirits, especially this past week. It's been like the bottom fell out of the bucket, and it's just crazy. And I'm just trying to summarize. I think it would take days to explain some of the stuff I've seen over the past week. It's just crazy. The principle I seem to see applied the most is that of birds of a feather. Spirits tend to join together with other spirits that they feel comfortable with, and that they feel comfortable being around, and they tend to agree with. And so that's what we see. And it's sort of like, you can think of gods and planes as political parties in the spirit world. And that's pretty much what they are. And the more partisan the spirit, these planes and gods, and the more partisan they are, the more hyped up on themselves they are, the more successful they tend to be. Now, the flip side of that is if they get too tight and become uncomfortable for the spirits within them, then the membership will tend to start jumping ship. There's a lot of drama involved in that process, as you can well imagine. So is this good or bad? I don't think it's either. I think it's just the way it is. It's good or bad depending on your point of view. you know, think about it from this point of view. You're a Christian, and you live your life as a Christian, and you've been forgiven. You've invited Jesus into your heart, and you know how that feels. And you know how that feels, because you know what? When you did invite Jesus into your heart, a God that goes by that name entered your heart. you tuned in to a Christian God. And I'm telling you, though, there's more than one of them. There's quite a few different ones. They tend to correspond loosely with what we can think of as sects. There's Catholic. And by the way, there's more than one Catholic God. So Catholics out there might take umbrage at this fact, but I'm telling you, there's more than one. There are schisms in all of these belief systems. The important aspect of all these belief systems, whether it be Catholicism, Christianity, Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, animism, paganism, you know, Shinto. By the way, Shinto, really cool Shinto. I used to think it was silly, but I'm really coming to appreciate Shinto. All of these doctrines, the most important thing they produce is the gods that spring forth from them. And like, for example, Islamic, you know, you could think of Christian and Islamic as offshoots from Judaism. And by the way, there's more than one Jewish God. There's actually quite a few of them, and they go by various names. And sometimes they ally, Lord of Hosts. You know, in Jewish writing, the God is referred to in many different ways. And that may just be, you know, a literary thing, but I think there's actually more to it than that. Also, if you look at the Islamic, look at some of the writings of Muhammad, well, I don't know if, look at the Quran. Very typically, Allah refers in the plural to himself. These references to themselves as in the plural, as we, you know, the imperial we, the godlike we, I think are clues that you are in fact dealing with a group of spirits, not just a single spirit when you're dealing with a god. And so let's move on here. How do gods influence things in this world? What are miracles? I think that miracles do take place, that they can occur. This model explains that. If you look at a plane like ours, say, as an agreement among the spirits that live with it, we all basically agree that this is the way things are. What a god can do is rally enough support from members of this plane, and maybe from other planes, to bend those rules locally, or in some small way, change the rules that we all tend to think are immutable. And that's how miracles occur. And I believe these miracles have occurred in the history of the world, and I believe they occur in every day, actually. There are people that swear by the power of prayer, and the reason why they do is because it works for them. Now, a thing to bear in mind about this is that we tend to think of miracles as being dramatic, but when you think about what is involved, you know, you have to get enough spirits to agree on something. So the more elaborate and the more dramatic it is, the harder it is to get spirits to agree. So when you're praying to a god, you're praying to that group of spirits, and some of them may agree with you and some of them won't. And that's the way it works. The ones that agree with you may join with you and help you to get what it is that you're seeking. If enough of them do that, then you may see some dramatic results. But by and large, the influences of gods in our world are relatively subtle. And the reason why is because we in this plane are so tuned into it and so unwilling to believe that that it can be changed that way, that it forms a barrier, an obstacle to other spirits and gods that would seek to influence the activities in this plane. And all planes are like that, by the way, or godhoods, whatever you want to think of them as. It's much easier for the members of a plane to affect what goes on in the plane than it is for spirits that are not in that plane. And what in that plane means is part of the group, part of that entity, part of the collective that decides what that is. And every plane has different rules, if you will, for how you can get in, how you get out. It varies, and it can be hard. This is actually a fairly difficult plane to get into by the standards of a lot of the other planes out there. Not because it's necessarily such a great place, but simply because it's so rigidly. Our plane, this reality, is a very rigid reality compared to some of the other planes I've seen. And compared to some of the planes you see in your dreams, which are very fluid and unreliable, these are views. Our dreams are views into what other planes can be like. we treasure the stability of this plane, and we guard it jealously. That's why we tend to place our faith in this reality. And we do it in many different ways, and different people do it different ways, but we all tend to agree. What's interesting is we still, each of us has a slightly different, sometimes radically different view of what the reality we live in is. But what we have in toto, if you will, is the sum total, the amalgamation of all our views of what this reality is. And if our views change, as our views change, I should say, the reality changes along with it. So I think if we look back through history, the history of this reality, we will find that things used to be different than they are now, and that things will be different than they are now. And I think that we're actually on the verge of a major change in the reality that we live in here. I think it's going to be dramatic, too. And just, I'll throw this out, because I'm coming to the end of this volume, and this is actually a different topic, but one of the things that I tuned into this week was what I would call the beast. In a classic Christian prophecy sense of the word, I believe that I have made contact with what I could call the beast. And it wasn't what I would have expected. I expected something demonic and, evil and... Well, it's got a tinge of that, but what surprised me about the beast is that the beast is much more sophisticated than I thought. And this is, the beast constitutes a group entity, or God, if you will, that transcends a wide range of planes and has a lot of influence on a lot of planes, including this one. And and what makes the beast special is that the beast is a family of beliefs, of religions, if you will, that work together in a cooperative sense. It's like a Borg, a spiritual Borg. And I don't know if there's a physical avatar for this beast on this planet yet, but I suspect there may be. And that this avatar, if you will be a human being that will be very charismatic and will be what we could think of as the focal point for this God on this planet. And I think... And by no means the only one. This is a huge, the beast is huge. And, sure enough, the symbols for the beast that seem to be associated with it are three groups of six, or the number 666. And a lot of press has been given to the beast and all that. And I'm not trying to be an alarmist or anything like that, but I think the beast is about to make some moves in our reality, and they'll be pretty dramatic. But I don't think that's a cause for fear. I just think it's something to be aware of. And I'll talk more about the beast in another podcast. And of course, it's just my impression, and all this can be deception. I could be wrong about all this. Anyway, concluding this very lengthy podcast, my conclusions are I'm finding this model, this planar model, helpful in my spiritual studies. It may just be a form of self-deception, but at least it seems to correlate well with what I've been seeing. I'll refine the model as my observations warrant, but so far it seems to be working pretty well. As always, I invite my my fellow members to comment on anything they might find interesting in my podcast, and let me know. Maybe, just let me know they need to be shorter. In any case, so this has been volume two of Moen's Planar Model of Spiritual Reality. And I might do a volume three, but I think I've kind of covered the topic fairly well. So on that note, I just want to say farewell, and may love and light mark your path.